Thank you for the opportunity to speak. We've got two verses this morning to speak from, and it's also the disappearance of Lokanath Goswami. So we'll speak a bit about him also to begin with, and then we'll go on to the verse. So Lokanath Goswami, he's actually an eternal associate of the Lord, and in Krishna Leela, he is known as Manjwali Manjari. When he was here 500 years ago in Lord Chaitanya's time, then he was known as a very humble devotee. He shunned fame. He asked Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami that his name be left out of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so that was granted. He had only one disciple. He wasn't interested in taking disciples, but he was impressed by Narottam Das Thakur's humility and accepted him as his disciple. And his deities, they are Radha Vinod. The original Radha Vinod are no longer in Vrindavan, but the Pratibhu deities of Radha Vinod are in the Radha Gokulananda temple, which, if you've been to Vrindavan, is just off of Loy Bazaar. Easy temple to find. So he was born in the village of Talkari, which is in the district of Jessore, Bangladesh, as the son of Padmanabh Bhattacharya and his wife Sri Sita Devi. Talkari can be reached from Sonakali and Kejura. It's interesting to see that just as when Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he describes so many places where these associates of the Lord came from and various pastimes which took place in Lord Chaitanya's Leelas. And Srila Prabhupada gives very exact directions how to get there. Sometimes he even mentions what train to catch and where to change, etc. So we can understand this is real. This is not some imaginary thing. This is a recent history, actually. So Padmanabh Bhattacharya was a devoted follower of Sri Advaita Acharya, who was very fond of Sri Padmanabh. The younger brother of Lokanath was Pragalba Bhattacharya. His descendants are still residing at Talkari. From his childhood, Lokanath was disinterested in worldly affairs. He decided to leave his home and came to Navadvip to have darshan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very lovingly embraced Lokanath and instructed him to go to Vrindavan as soon as possible. Lokanath could understand that Mahaprabhu would renounce his family within a few days, and he was aggrieved at this. Mahaprabhu consoled him and told him that they would meet again in Vrindavan. With tears flowing from his eyes, Lokanath offered his obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the all-omniscient Lord lovingly embraced him, and after explaining some hidden truths to him, he instructed him to go to Vrindavan. Thus, Lokanath, after surrendering himself at the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, set out for Sri Vrindavan Dham. After that, he never returned home. Being greatly afflicted by separation from the Lord, he set out to tour the holy places and then finally came to Vrindavan. Meanwhile, Lord Chaitanya accepted sannyas and then came to Neelachal, Jagannath Puri. After some time, when Mahaprabhu set out on his tour of South India, Lokanath Goswami, having received this news, also journeyed to the south. Then Mahaprabhu came to Vrindavan. Lokanath followed him there. But by the time he reached Vrajabhumi, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already left for Prayag. Lokanath was extremely sad, again having missed darshan of his Prabhu. He decided to leave the next morning for Prayag. In a dream, however, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to console Lokanath Goswami and requested him to stay at Vrindavan. Thus, Lokanath remained at Vrajadham, not wanting to neglect the order of Mahaprabhu. He stayed alone, his presence unknown to anyone. But after some days, he met the dear disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Rupa, Sri Sanatan, Sri Gopal Bhatta, Sri Bhugarbha, and others. They were all very affectionate to one another, and it was as though they were of one mind. Amongst the Goswamis, Lokanath was the eldest. He was always intensely absorbed in loving ecstatic mellows. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, you find this verse: I worship Srimati Kashishwara, Srimati Lokanath, and Srimad Krishnadas Kaviraj, who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Govinda and who are very dear to Sri Vrindavan. He used to visit the many places of Krishna's pastimes within Vrajadam, and in this way he was always absorbed in intense ecstasy. Lokanath came to the banks of Kishori Kund within the village of Umrao by the side of Chatrabon and remained there for a few days. Lokanath wanted very much to be able to worship the deity form of the Lord and Sri Krishna, who is within the heart of everyone. He was thus presented a deity form of himself. Krishna presented a deity form of himself to Lokanath to worship, and this deity's name is Radha Vinod. So we spoke about this early, and the original Radha Vinod was moved out of Vrindavan. So seeing Lokanath deep in thought, Radha Vinod laughed. Who would have brought me here? I have come myself. I live here on the banks of Kishori Kund, and this is my village, Umrao. Now please give me something to eat. So this is the type of devotee Lokanath Goswami is, that the Lord will come to him in dreams and converse with him and give him personal instructions. So he was beside himself with bliss, and being immersed in that ecstasy, he prepared some foodstuffs and offered them to Radha Vinod. Then he made a bed of flowers and made the deity lie down to rest. He fanned the deity with some leaves and meditated on massaging the lotus feet of his Lord. Having surrendered his body, mind, and very life itself, he was totally absorbed, as though drinking a flow of honey like nectar. Lokanath Goswami had no permanent abode. Some Vrajavasi villagers wanted to build a little hut for him, but he wouldn't agree. He made a bag for Radha Vinod, which he kept around his neck. Radha Vinod was as though a rare gem suspended on a necklace round the neck of Lokanath. His activities represented the crest jewel of asceticism, and the other Goswamis managed to keep him in their company only by great endeavour. It's very difficult to describe the character of Lokanath Goswami, who is so dear to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Lord Chaitanya and some of the other Goswamis began their pastimes of disappearance, Lokanath maintained his life only due to the desire of Lord Chaitanya. Sri Lokanath Goswami initiated Nargam Das Thakur Mahashay in the Divine Mantra. There's no mention anywhere of any other disciple of his. It is not possible to describe the care which Nargam Thakur served as guru. Early in the morning, he would clean the place where his Guru Maharaj had passed through. Lokanath Goswami, having become quite advanced in years, entered into his eternal pastimes while residing at Kadir Bon or Koyuragram. There's a large lake there called Sri Yugala Kund, on the banks of which his samadhi has been established. His worshipful deity, Sri Radha Vinod, are at present being worshipped in Jaipur, Rajasthan. His Pushpa Samadhi is within the courtyard of Sri Gokulananda Mandir. Now, it's interesting that there are some remnants of Lokanath Goswami in our daily life, like some of the prayers which we chant. If I remember correctly, this Guru Vandana is by Lokanath. When we say Lokanath Lokarya Jivana, then the Lokanath actually refers to Lokanath Goswami. And had it not been for his request to stay out of the limelight, then we would have known a lot more about him, but this is his humility. So it's said that Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami approached Lokanath Goswami for his blessings and any information that he might be able to supply in order that he might satisfactorily compose Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lokanath Goswami forbade Kaviraj Goswami to mention his name or describe anything about him. In order to honour the request of this great Vaishnava, he therefore didn't write anything about him. His disappearance is on the 8th day of the bright fortnight of the month of Shravan, which is today. Narottam Das Thakur Mahashay has prayed at the lotus feet of his guru as follows. O my Lord Lokanath, please keep me at your feet, and if it please you, please let your glance of mercy fall upon me. I have a great longing that my mind's desire might be fulfilled. Wherever one gets the association of Lord Chaitanya, there also he gets the association of Sri Radha Krishna. If you're not merciful to me, then who will be this time? Please fulfill my mind's desires. In the three worlds, I have no one other than you. Please keep me near your lotus feet, where I might hear day and night, where I met you, the desire of Narottam Das cannot be fulfilled. Sri Lokanath Goswami Prabhu Ki. Now we can actually chant the verse. Today's verse is from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Majalila, chapter 6, two verses, verse 243 and 244. So I'll just do this myself. Gopinath Acharya Balayami Purve Ye Kahila Shuna Bhattacharya Tomara Seita Haila. Gopinath Acharya reminded Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, my dear Bhattacharya, what I foretold to you has now taken place. And there's no purport to that one. So we'll go on to the next one, which is Gopinath Acharya Balayami Purve Ye Kahila Shuni Bhattacharya Tomara Seita Haila. So that was verse 244. I'll just go back and read 243. Aishlokera Arta Shanaila Karya Vishtara Shuni Bhattacharya Mani Haila Chamatkara. The translation to that one is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very elaborately explained the Harinama verse of the Brihan Naradiya Purana, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was struck with wonder to hear his explanation. And then that verse, Gopinath Acharya Bali Ami Purvi Ye Kahila Chuna Bhattacharya Tomara Seita Haila. Gopinath Acharya reminded Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, my dear Bhattacharya, what I foretold to you has now taken place. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. Previously, Gopinath Acharya had informed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that when he would be blessed by the Lord, he would thoroughly understand the transcendental process of devotional service. This prediction was now fulfilled. The Bhattacharya was fully converted to the cult of Vaishnavism, and he was following the principles automatically, without being pressured. In Bhagavad Gita 2.40, it is therefore said, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato, mahato bayat. Simply by performing a little devotional service, one can escape the greatest danger. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had been in the greatest danger because he had adhered to Mayavad philosophy. Somehow or other, he came into contact with Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and became a perfect devotee. In this way, he was saved from the great fall down of impersonalism. First of all, I would just like to thank everyone for attending the class, and I hope everyone's keeping well and keeping well in Krishna consciousness. So one of the two important points can be taken from these verses and from this purport of Srila Prabhupada is this Mayavadi philosophy is a very dangerous situation for the living entity to be in. Srila Prabhupada referred to impersonal liberation as spiritual suicide. So just like we have suicide for the body, if life becomes too troublesome, sometimes people take their life thinking it's going to be improvement at least because they're so disturbed in life or they're so despondent. Srila Prabhupada also mentions that when one becomes frustrated with life, then they want to give up being a person. But to enter into the Brahma Jyoti is not actually the solution, just as material suicide is not a solution. It's only a temporary, another temporary situation, which is not natural for the soul. The soul by nature is active, not inactive, so they cannot remain there. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned that just as the astronauts go into outer space and they have to come back to Earth again because they have no resting place. So similarly, when the living entity, after so much trouble, finally achieves impersonal liberation, then because they have no resting place, they have to come back down to Earth. And then we see sometimes some so-called great swamis and sannyasis, they perform altruistic activities because they cannot remain the inactive state. They cannot remain in the active state. Srila Prabhupada refers to this impersonal liberation or this Mayavad philosophy as the last snare of Maya. So this, even sometimes the Mayavadis will worship the deity and they'll chant the holy name, but their intention is not devotional service. Their intention is that I worship the deity so that I can be elevated and I'll chant this mantra so I can be elevated, and then we don't need it because I've become God. So this is their intention behind it all. And so simply they use the spiritual master or deity worship like a ladder to get to. It's like when you use a ladder to perhaps get on top of a roof and then you kick the ladder away, then that's quite foolish really, because then you have to come back down. You can't stay on the roof forever. So this impersonalism is very hard-hearted. Very much austerity is performed, and at the end of it, they don't get satisfaction. They have to come back to material world, try to do something in the mode of goodness. And if they meet a devotee, then they can get actual liberation. So when the living entity comes into the material world, they come here to enjoy separately from Krishna. And the epitome of enjoying separately from Krishna is that they want to be God. So everyone in the material world is competing to be God. Someone gets some wealth or some position, and someone wants to take that wealth off them so they can enjoy it. This is the modus operandi of the living entity in the material world, is envy. Let me take this from you so I can have it. I see that you've got something that I want, so let me have it and let you not have it. Let me be the big dog. So our intention is to try to compete with Krishna as being an enjoyer in the material world, but simply become servant of our senses. And the epitome of that is that we merge with God, we become one with God, we think we're God. So therefore it's known as the last snare of Maya. It's still a trap. And another dangerous situation to be in is to fall into the animal species of life once again. So Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita 2:40, Neha Bhiktimunasa Sti, Pratabhani Vidyute, Swapama Pashya Dharma Shya Mahati, Triti Mahado Bayat. So that a little advancement in this path of devotional service frees one from the most dangerous situation. And it's mentioned that most dangerous situation is to fall down again into the material world. So there's no endeavor. We shouldn't think that, well, I don't think I'm going to be perfect in this life, it's too difficult, whatever. We cannot underestimate the power of devotional service. Devotional service is so powerful because it's none different from Krishna. As we engage in devotional service, we're burning up our sinful reactions accumulated for many, many births. And we're re-establishing our original connection with Krishna, which is far more advanced situation than impersonal liberation. And even a little advancement on this path, Krishna explains, can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So we shouldn't underestimate our own connection with Krishna, our own service. And this connection with Krishna begins with Shravanam Kirtanam, leading to Vishnu Smaranam. So we want that at the time of death, we'll be able to remember Krishna. Not that we've become attached to something else and we remember that and forget Krishna. So if we spend our life trying to remember Krishna, trying to serve Krishna, whatever our situation is, whether we're living in the temple or whether we're living at home, then all our activities, we have to try to direct them towards Krishna consciousness as best as we can in the circumstances which we're in. Because this human form is very rare to achieve. it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 19, text 151. Brahmande, Brahmati, Konya, Bhagavan, Jeev, Guru, Krishna, Prasadi, Pai, Bhakti, Lata, Beach. So when the living entity desires to escape from this material world, the Lord, who is his eternal friend and witness within his heart, he sees this and he arranges for the living entity to get association of devotees. So Srila Prabhupada also mentions that, yes, the Lord has made this material world for us to enjoy. And when we try to enjoy it, we become frustrated and then we turn back to him. So this Brahmanda Brahmati Kwani Bhagavani Jeev means we've been wandering throughout the universe in so many different species trying to enjoy. We've done it all, we've seen it all, and still we think we can enjoy. But by the mercy of the spiritual master, he gives some, and by the mercy of Krishna, then they enlighten us to the fact that this material world is not where we belong. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, jeev jago, gora chandaboli, kota nidra jaumaya, pisa chirikoli. Wake up, sleeping souls. You've been sleeping in the lap of the witch called Maya for so long. You come into this world saying, my Lord, certainly I'll remember you, but we've forgotten this promise and we've remained in great ignorance. And when we finally become frustrated with this material world, we turn to Krishna. So many years ago when I was working, there was an old man who was I was working with, and he was talking about his belief. He'd been in the Second World War, and he said that even all the big tough guys who previously didn't believe in God, they didn't go to church, and they were considered what you would call hard men. Before going on the front line to fight, they were all down on their knees praying. So this is natural. When a living entity is in a difficult situation, they turn to God because the Lord is within our heart. And he's always just waiting for us to turn to him. And as soon as we show a little interest, then the Lord makes so many arrangements. So we may have heard that when we take one step toward Krishna, he takes 10 towards us. So this little advancement in passing devotional services, Krishna's way of encouraging us to keep going. And even if we do something, do the best we can, then Krishna will take steps to allow us to remain in his entourage, to remain in his association of devotees. There's been some interesting examples. There was one person before they became a devotee, actually. This man was very depressed. He was frustrated and he couldn't find anything worth living for. So he decided he was going to take his own life, and he proceeded to drive to the seaside, and his plan was to walk off of a cliff. So as he was walking toward the cliff with the intention of just walking off the end of it, he felt something. It was quite windy, as it often is at the seaside, and he felt something touch his leg, the bottom of his leg, and he looked down and he seen it was a torn page of a magazine. So he picked it up and he read it. Turned out it was part of a Back to Godhead magazine. He sat down, read it, and went and found a temple and joined the temple, and he's still serving to this day. There was another occasion I heard many years ago when one devotee, before he was a devotee, because devotees don't do this, he was fishing in a canal, and he cast his line, and he felt like he'd caught something quite big, and he reeled it in. And somehow or another, someone had wrapped Srimad Bhagavatam within plastic and the water hadn't got into it. And he read it and he became a devotee. So Krishna will make so many arrangements, but at the same time, Krishna won't interfere with our free will. We have to desire somewhat that we want to be a devotee. So by getting the mercy of the spiritual master, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai, that mercy is the Bhakti Lata Bij, that he will plant the seed of devotion within our heart. You know, for so long we've been watering a different type of seed, watering the seed of desire, watering the seed of pride, just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He He was such a great scholar. In the Gaura Ganadesha Deepika, which is a nice little book, which illuminates, a lamp which illuminates the associates of Lord Chaitanya, it mentions that. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is actually none other than Brihaspati, the demigod's spiritual master. So he took his birth in the material world, on planet Earth, to take part in the pastimes of the Lord. And he got deliverance of the Lord, got great mercy from the Lord. But he was, and he was known as the greatest scholar of the day. Back in those days, there were many great scholars, such as Keshava Kashmiri, etc., who also attained the mercy of the Lord, Prakashananda Saraswati. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was considered the topmost scholar. He was so highly respected, and he was enjoying that respect. And when he spoke of the Atmarama verse to Lord Chaitanya, after speaking with Lord Chaitanya for 7 days, well, with all his disciples, and Lord Chaitanya was one of the students, then he asked Lord Chaitanya, "Have you understood everything? You've sat there silently, you haven't said anything." And of course, he was used to his disciples saying, "Oh, Guru Maharaj, very good, very illuminating, etc." And Lord Chaitanya says, "Have you understood the verse?" He says, "Yes, I understand the verse, but everything you have said is nonsense." So, of course, he wasn't used to being addressed in this way. He was flabbergasted, so to speak. And Lord Chaitanya explained the Atmarama verse in such a way that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was taken aback, pretty much shell-shocked, because he'd understood that all his so-called learning was in vain, and that he had not only had been misleading himself, but misleading so many others. So he was very much devastated, and Lord Chaitanya kindly appeared to him in the form of Sadbuj. The Lord was desiring to give him his mercy. And this Sadbuj form is the six-armed form of the Lord, of course. Two arms of Krishna holding the flute, two arms of Lord Ram holding the bow and arrow, and two arms of Lord Chaitanya with his water pot and sannyas staff, his danda. And he showed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that I am none other than Lord Krishna and Lord Ram, and I am the Parameshwara, Ishwara Paramakrishna, Sachit Ananda Vigraha, Anadi Radhir Govinda Sarvakarana Karnam. He showed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that actually everything he was studying, everything he was speaking about, that he is actually the source of everything. So he was lucky to get the mercy of the Lord. And although his world suddenly collapsed, Lord Chaitanya bestowed this mercy by showing his Sadbuj form to him. And we see in this purport that he became a perfect devotee. He didn't have to try. He was already in very good standing. So he was eligible in so many ways. So this mercy is like a parent. First of all, he takes away something which is harmful to him. This impersonal philosophy which he was propounding was very harmful to him and others. And then, just like if a child's playing with some broken glass, the parent takes that away and replaces it with something more valuable, like a proper jewel. So the Lord, he takes away something which is dangerous for us, and then which is of no value, and he replaces it by giving shelter and giving real meaning to life. So sometimes we can be a bit like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. We become proud about something. Perhaps we have proud about our achievements, even as devotees. But if we honestly look at ourselves and think, well, what was I before I was a devotee? Where was I heading? Was it somewhere auspicious? You know, and except for perhaps those who are fortunate to be born into a devoted family. But many of us, we look at our past and we realise what we were doing wasn't very auspicious. It wasn't leading to a very auspicious conclusion. But by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of the other devotees, then our life has become auspicious. And this auspiciousness begins with the Sadhu Sangha, when we desire to be extricated from this material world into, we have some questions as to why are we here, what is life about, what's the purpose of life. And Krishna gives us association of devotees, and we come across Srila Prabhupada's books. This is also association of devotees. Prabhupada says we should seek out the association of a pure devotee or devotees. So certainly we can see in Srila Prabhupada's books, we see what is the standard of a pure devotee. But it's not that we should only think, well, I'm only going to associate with pure devotees. Because Prabhupada also says that we don't know who's next to us. It could be Narada Muni. So we shouldn't treat each other with familiarity, because familiarity breeds contempt. And we should never become contemptuous towards devotees. If we're feeling like that, then that's pride. And they say pride comes before a fall. So this verse, Trinad Peace and HNA, Toror Peace Ishnana, Amanina Manadena, Kirtni Stahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself, Lord, and strong in the street. One should be more tolerant in the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects unto others. So in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So every day we have to be trying to cultivate that state of mind so that we can continue to chant. If we want to stay in the association of devotees and gain the mercy of Krishna, continue to get the mercy of Krishna, then we have to learn to give up our pride. And Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, he was so fortunate that immediately he gave up his pride and he became a great devotee. Prior to that, he was thinking that the devotees were sentimentalists. He wouldn't take them seriously. But then when he realized that there was great meaning and this was the real life, then he became a great devotee in spreading Krishna meaning. And this was the real life, then he became a great devotee in spreading Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada also mentioned that if we have some ability or some quality, some talent, without Krishna, it's just so many zeros. But when we put Krishna there, then it becomes 10, 100, 1,000, a million. So when Krishna is there, then everything has great value. And Krishna's not there, it doesn't matter what we have, it has no value. It can be taken away at any time. But for a devotee, if something's taken away, we still have Krishna. Because we're not depending on external circumstances, external conditions, we're depending on Krishna. So, of course, in our practice of devotional service, our practice of hearing, chanting, offering our food, reading books, associating with devotees, and engaging in devotional service, then we have to act as if everything depends on us, but we know that everything depends on Krishna, because Krishna is the sanctioning agent. So in the previous verses to this, then the Harinama Eva Kevalam verse was discussed, and the chanting, it was mentioned that chanting is the most important aspect of devotional service, and other aspects serve to enhance that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that in the material world, there's only two things of any substance, and that is the jiva and the holy name. So everything else there is to serve that purpose of the jiva connecting with the Lord through the holy name, because through the holy name, the Lord's form, pastimes, etc. will be revealed. And because there's no difference. Also mentioned in the verse was this cult of Vaishnavism. So cult can be considered to be culture, which, or to cultivate, So we have to cultivate our devotional service by regular practice. So this Bhakti Lata Beej, or the seed of the creeper of devotional service, which is implanted in our heart by the spiritual master, by hearing and chanting, we water that every day. So if we're growing, if we're trying to grow something, then we don't like not water it for a few days and then think, oh, I forgot to water it, I better throw a whole bucket of water on it. But regular, if we're chanting one round a day, if that's our level, then we keep that going and make a plan to increase that to two rounds a day. If we're chanting four rounds a day, we keep doing that. We don't go below that. So this is regular practice of devotional service. Even in the beginning, it might seem mechanical. So it's not that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared to each and every individual one of us as Sadhbuj in our living room. We're not that fortunate. But we're hearing about these pastimes. So that means the Lord is appearing in our heart and in our mind because he's making himself available to us through these devotees and their pastimes with him. So by regular hearing and chanting, it's mentioned that all that is inauspicious within the heart will gradually be destroyed to zero, and all that will remain is loving devotional service. So we have to continue to water the seed of bhakti, starting with Shravanam Kirtanam, and try to find some service and try to make that service favourable. So in the beginning, we may be thinking, this is troublesome, this is difficult, finding time to chant, finding time to read. It may be, but if we give that time, then we're overcoming the mind. We'd like to be transcendental to the mind, but by engaging in the process of devotional service, we are transcending the mind. It's just a matter of time before we'll see that, where the mind becomes our friend. So when the mind says, oh, don't bother chanting today, or don't bother being attentive, just think of something else which is more important, then we ignore the mind, we can bring the mind back. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the higher self. So that higher self is intelligence and our attention to hearing the holy name. And everything is coming from the holy name. When we're attentive to our chanting and hearing and chanting, then we'll be attentive to our service. We'll be attentive to the association of devotees. So it's important that we continue in devotional service, even when it's difficult, because Prabhupada says that devotional service begins when things are difficult. When things are easy, then anyone can do it. But we don't want to just be a fair-weather friend to Krishna. We want to be his devotee. So when things are difficult, then we have to muster up some devotion so that we can continue with our hearing and chanting and service and continue to try to offer respect to the devotees. even though it's difficult in this material world, then we still endeavour to be a devotee. There was an instance when I was told this story. Srila Prabhupada arrived in London and Indrajyumna Maharaj was travelling with him as his personal servant. But Srila Prabhupada's bags didn't arrive. So Prabhupada was greeted by all the devotees at the airport. They had great big kirtan and they went back to Bury Place Temple. They had kirtan there and Prabhupada gave an amazing lecture and then they had a feast. But meanwhile, Indrajyumna Maharaj had to stay behind in the airport to collect Srila Prabhupada's bags. And he was feeling quite bad that he didn't get to attend Prabhupada's address, lecture, and be there with the devotees in the kirtan and be with Prabhupada. So finally, Srila Prabhupada's bags arrived and Indrajyumna Maharaj took them to Bury Place. And I believe Srila Prabhupada's room was at the top of the building. He climbed up the stairs with the bags. And it was late at night by the time he arrived and Prabhupada was still awake. And he came in and he paid his obeisances and left Prabhupada's bags there. And Prabhupada could see that he wasn't exactly fired up at that time, having missed all the festivities. And Srila Prabhupada walked over to him as he was paying his obeisances and as he was getting up, then he slapped him on the back and he said, in the material world, it's very difficult to be a devotee. But when you go back to Godhead, it's very easy because everyone's a devotee. So in this way, he got special mercy from Srila Prabhupada by his service. So sometimes we may be doing service thinking that, oh, I'm missing out on this or missing out on that. But Krishna sees it. So therefore, rather than try to enjoy Krishna consciousness, if we try to serve Krishna conscious movement, we will automatically enjoy it. We'll get a lot of blessings and we make advancement. We get the mercy of the spiritual master. We get the benefits of serving the spiritual master. So this Trinadapi verse is very important. We chant it every morning at the morning program at the temple. And it's a meditation. That's why it's there. It's a meditation for our daily activity. And we see every day we have the opportunity to be more tolerant and straw in the street because we have to tolerate things. We have to tolerate the body, the mind, other people. One time, there was one senior devotee. I went to complain to him that I was having trouble tolerating this devotee. And he said to me, have you ever thought that perhaps he's having to tolerate you? And when I heard that, I thought, actually, he's got a more difficult job than I have. Because I think it would be difficult to tolerate me. So therefore, it became very easy to tolerate him because I realized he's got a harder job than I had. And so therefore, when we think we're having to tolerate someone, just remember that they're also having to tolerate us. And perhaps they're doing a better job than we are. And this is a good opportunity to, every day we have opportunity to become tolerant and to offer respect to others. Even when we don't feel like it, when we do offer respect to others, then this is very pleasing to Krishna. We're overcoming the mind, we're overcoming the lower consciousness. And we're overcoming our pride. Actually, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that pride or false prestige is as valuable as the dung of a boar. So, of course, if you've been to India, or if you're from India, you may know that in some places they still have open sewers where the sanitation system, which is a very kind of ecological and sustainable system, is the hog, the boar. He eats the stool of everybody apart from the hog. Even the hog won't eat hog stool. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the false prestige is as valuable as the dung of a boar. It has no value. It's an illusion. And he also says that the objects of false prestige are falsely prestigious. So if we think about that for a minute, sometimes we like to think that we're doing well because we have a nice chadar, or we have a nice husband or a nice wife, or a nice house or a nice car. And if we're depending on these things, if they're taken away from us, then that becomes also a source of distress. So the prestige which is got from these things is false. There's no real value to them. It's simply another manifestation, temporary manifestation of the material energy, which is endlessly mutable. Like, for example, nowadays we might think I have a certain type of car would be of great prestige, but then, you know, 10, 20 years from now, nobody will want that. So it has no real value. It's just imaginary. So Krishna gives meaning to our lives. And this begins with the hearing and chanting process, of which Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was, it was foretold by his godbrother, sorry, his brother-in-law, Gopinath Acharya. He said that when you get the mercy, the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, then this devotional service, you'll see the real meaning of it. And he got that. He got that mercy by the mercy of the devotee. He got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So therefore, Krishna says, one who is my, not actually my devotee, but one who is a devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee. So, of course, we've probably all heard this many times. And there's no harm in hearing it again. Prabhupada says repetition is the mother of learning. So if we've already learned that, we won't mind hearing it again. And if we haven't learned it, then we have to keep hearing it and putting it into practice. So not only doing devotional service mechanically, but we have to come to the point of Anyabhilasya Tasunyam Gana Kamadhinavitam Anakulina Krishna Nushilanam Bhagyutama, that we learn to perform our devotional service favourably. So this is the challenge. We may theorise with our intelligence, yes, this is a path to follow and I'll do it. And sometimes it may be willing, sometimes it might be a bit begrudging. But we have to mould our life in such a way as that our devotional service becomes favourable. This is an important thing. Because it's devotional service, it's not enslaved service. It's not them ones forcing us, it's a willing process, which means for us to gain advancement, then we want to be willing. So personally, I've found sometimes that if I've been proud or if my association with devotees has been less than desirable, if I feel I may have offended someone or caused them some disturbance, then we should go and offer our obeisances. And we can do something for them. We can offer some service, we can offer some prasadam, or we can do something to please them. Or even if in general, if we think that we are quite a proud person, then we can seek some way of doing some menial service just to remove that pride. And we see that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he had a lot to be proud of. He was very learned, topmost scholar, but yet still he gave a lot to become a humble servant. So similarly with us, we may think we have a lot to be proud of, but those objects are false. And the real thing to be proud of is that we're coming in this disciplic succession, representing the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. We can be proud of Krishna. We can be proud of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master of the Vaishnavas. But for ourselves, then we don't see that we have much to be proud of. We see that we have a lot of work to do. So in the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada mentions that a pure devotee does not like to remain idle. Therefore, we should always try to keep ourselves engaged in devotional service, man mana bhava mad bhakto. Always engage your mind in serving the Lord. And this way we become a great devotee. Also, following in the footsteps, Mahajanayena Gathasapanta, and when we follow in footsteps of the great devotees, then we also achieve that same destination by their mercy. So I'd just like to thank everyone for their kind attention, and if there's any questions, we could try and answer them. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much. I personally felt like this was a class I needed to hear, so I really appreciate it. There's just, before I move on to the question, there's just quite a few points here that I want to reiterate that really stood out for me. So you were speaking about how Mayavadi practice, Mayavadi philosophy in personal liberation can cause about our spiritual suicide, and how the soul cannot remain inactive. And Prabhupada gave the example of an astronaut that even though they may travel out of space, eventually they'll have to return back. So same with us, through Mayavadi philosophy and Mayavadi practice, we may be liberated, whatever, but we'll come back again into this material world. And how impersonalism can actually develop a very hard-heartedness within us. So I have a question for you. You know, it's like when we actually listen and when we talk about the lives of our acharyas, we can see that they have such amazing purity and sincerity and faith. However, we know here that in today's modern world, for the sake of preaching, sometimes we may do need to attract a little bit of attention, you know, onto ourselves, so therefore we can preach. But how do we ensure that whatever attention we're getting, at the same time, we can also sustain our own purity and our own humility, and somehow along the track, we don't get lost in the limelight, we don't get lost in all the glorification and people praising us? How can we keep that purity and that faith consistent, and, you know, really give everything to Prabhupada instead of ourselves?
Yeah, I think the answer is in your question, that you're already aware that that can be a problem. And Prabhupada did mention that even though there are men like hogs and dogs criticize this movement, The devotees of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness will carry on the responsible work, taking all sorts of risks to preach Krishna consciousness. So we take some risks, and we have to remind ourselves why we're doing it. So like you were saying, we're doing it for preaching purposes, so we're not doing it for self. If it becomes something else, then that's a danger, of course. And danger is already there, but if we keep reminding ourselves why we're doing it, mm-hmm. and praying to the Lord for his mercy to protect us, that we don't become influenced by fame. Because this is also a very good point you brought up. This is known as subtle sex life: name, fame, distinction, adoration, and gain. So if we become attached to these things, then ultimately the subtle will lead to the gross. And even if it doesn't, it's still a distraction. So we have to just remain fixed in our intention while we're doing this. If we become a famous person, use that fame for Krishna. Just like our dear old friend who we never met, George Harrison, he was very famous, and at one point he was willing to surrender, shave up, and be an ashram devotee. And Prabhupada told him, no, use your fame to spread Krishna consciousness. So similarly, we can do the same. No, and that fame may be there today, it may be infamy tomorrow. So can we handle the infamy as well? No, we sometimes forget this tamstitik shashwabharata refers to sukha and dukkha. We want to tolerate the distress or the infamy. We want to know how to tolerate the negative aspects of material world. But when the enjoying aspects comes, we think we don't have to tolerate that. We just enjoy. But actually, it's equally or even more so important and more difficult to tolerate happiness than it is distress, which means we stay fixed in our consciousness. We don't think, oh, this fame's come for me to enjoy now. No. So whatever we have, we use it in Krishna's service. And to continue to stay safe, then keep in association of devotees who will keep your feet on the ground and do some menial service. But we don't have to do menial service ostentatiously. It's like, check me out, I'm washing the toilets. I'm so humble. I'm the best at being humble. I'm more humble than everybody. No, we should do it even sometimes without anybody knowing, just for the satisfaction and the pleasure of the devotees. Is that okay?
Yeah. If anyone else has a question, please do let me know. But I also want to follow up with another question in terms of that, actually. You are mentioning about the importance of, you know, having the association, Sadhu Sangha. So my question is that, okay, there's false humility. Other than false humility, there's also the false ego, that we sometimes come into Krishna consciousness with a lot of anarthas and a lot of limiting beliefs. And so sometimes we may feel we're not deserving of association. We may feel like, you know, we can't really connect with devotees, or the devotees do not understand us. So then that can actually get in the way of revealing one's heart, you know, being able to be open, being able to give a gift and all these, to be able to develop that deep bond with devotees that's needed in order to help our advancement and for us to be able to contribute to their lives. So how do we also tackle this? How do we tackle that limiting conditions that we may have within ourselves? So therefore, we don't project something false onto devotees and, you know, potentially impede our own spiritual life.
Yes, so a feeling we don't deserve the association of devotees is a good thing. That's humility, and that's good. But still, we may feel we don't deserve it, but we've got the mercy, therefore we can be grateful. So it's not that we become despondent, we become enthusiastic. We think, well, I'm certainly such a rascal, and you know, I'm quite happy to speak about my rascal Leela at the drop of a hat. So, but I don't deserve this association of devotees. Everyone is actually a great devotee. So this is a nice thing. The devotee thinks everyone else is a devotee except for them. Someone who's proud thinks everyone else is a fool except for me. Yeah, I'm the only devotee around here. So that's pride. So, but also regarding understanding, if we think people don't understand us, then we can try to explain ourselves a bit better. Also, it may be that they do understand us, and we just have a different concept of who we are as to how others see us. Atmanam Dayate Jagat. that we see the world through our own false ego, and we don't necessarily see ourselves as others see us. There's a Scottish poet, famous Scottish poet Robbie Burns, he said that if God would give us a gift to see us as others see us, the world would be a better place. So I don't know if you understood that, but if God would give us the gift to see ourselves as others see us, the world would be a better place. So to seek to understand also, as opposed to simply trying to be understood, if we try to understand others, then we may realize that perhaps they do understand us better. So two ways, we can do simultaneously, we can try to understand others better, just like if we find it difficult tolerating someone, remember that they have to tolerate us. And they also may be feeling that we don't understand them. So seek to understand. This is a good way to cultivate a relationship with devotees, to try to understand them better. what difficulties they may have, and what challenges they may have, and try to help them. They say that when you help someone get to the top of a hill, you automatically get there yourself. I had an occasion once, I used to drive this big American motorhome, travelling Sankirtan, and this was many years ago before the Goshal was built at the manor, and there was one devotee who was in charge of the cows at that time, Dushanta his name is, and I had driven this motorhome down, and there was an overhead electrical cable going to the Goshala, and I just drove right through it and broke it. I broke the electrical supply to the cow shed. And he came out and he was quite rightly angry because I was just, wasn't looking properly. So he gave me a bit of a chastisement, and my false ego was such that I just barked back, and I says, he said to me, don't you care for the cows? You know, you're coming down here in your big fancy machine and you just broke this electrical supply to the cows and now the cows have no electricity because of you. I said, if you're so concerned, why didn't you put it under the ground in the first place? It's an accident waiting to happen. So this was kind of an argument went on, and then we kind of parted in a very bad mood. And then later on, my spiritual master, I told him about it, and he says, you go back to that devotee and apologize. He says, because he was right. You should have watched where you were going. You've disturbed his service. You've disturbed the cows. So you go and apologize and mean it. So I did. I sought him out, and I went to apologize to him. And immediately he changed. He says, no, you're right. That was an accident waiting to happen. We should have done something about it. So you find if you approach in a certain way with humility, then you'll get that back out of people. But if we approach simply with pride or we expect to be understood without trying to understand, then that might not cultivate the best relationship. And since that day, then that devotee and myself became very good friends and had a lot of respect for each other because we spoke our mind and then we changed our mind and we accepted each other's point of view. Anything else?
Thank you so much. I've got so many questions, but yeah, I'll keep it to two more. And if anyone else has a question, great. Another question I have is just moving on to something else. So, you know, sometimes it's very natural to turn to Krishna when we're going through struggles and difficulties and challenges in our life. But my recent realization is that Krishna is a person. And yes, he is happy for us to return to him when we're going through struggles and needs. But then it's also about cultivating a relationship with Krishna when things are good in our life. So how can we practically apply that in our spiritual life where it's just not when we're struggling, we return to Krishna, but also when things may be good and positive?
That's a good question. Thanks, Guru. Yeah, so to count our blessings, that's a good way to realize that everything's coming from Krishna. And just as the weather is changing all the time, especially in the UK, when one minute it's sunny, next minute we've got clouds. So our day can be like that even in the course of a day or a week. Sometimes we're experiencing happiness, distress, or some good fortune or some ill fortune, some difficulty, some easy times, some good times. But just try to see Krishna in all of these things. And so to be able to do that is just to simply appreciate that Krishna has given us facility. He's given us this human form of life. He's given us the association of devotees. And he's given us devotional service. And so whatever good is there is simply by Krishna's mercy. So just to continue to try to take shelter of Krishna, knowing that these things are temporary. The perception of when times are good, we think, oh, this is great, it's going to last forever. Just like when you're a child, if you're in the fairground, you might be on some Ferris wheel or some kind of roundabout, and you're thinking, oh, this is great, I wish this could last forever. Or when we're having a great time, we think, I wish this would last forever. But it doesn't, because it's material. Everything which has a beginning has an end. So just remember, when times are good, that we just have to stay steady, not become elated by the good, and just remain fixed that this will pass, and in due course something challenging will come along and that will pass, and then something elating will come along and that will pass, and this keeps on going. So I hope that helps.
No, thank you so much. I'm not gonna, maybe someone from the temple room. Does anyone have a question from the temple room? Yeah, great. Someone has a question from the temple room. Great.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. It's very relatable, especially when you're talking about impersonalism. I had a question. So what if we're still somewhat attracted to the impersonal aspect, and still kind of this, some kind of conditioning is still there? So what should someone who's still kind of conditioned by impersonal philosophy, what should they do to transition, and how can they overcome that?
Okay, well, by taking the darshan of Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda and by taking the prasadam, just like the four Kumaras, they were already liberated. They weren't aspiring to be liberated. They were liberated in the impersonal concept. But when they took the Mahaprasadam in the form of Tulsi Manjaris, they became devotees. So you rightly did mention that it's a condition, and it is a condition so which we want to become free from. So pray to the deities that you may become attracted to them beyond that other aspect of the Lord, which is the impersonal effulgence. So we may be attracted to that for some reason or another, because Prabhupada mentions that impersonalism is that we're afraid to be a person. We're afraid of personal exchanges. So create good association, good exchanges with devotees, and that becomes very relishable. Yeah, so I would say that pray to the deities, take your prasadam, and make good relationships with the devotees, and you'll become, because Krishna is all attractive, then whatever attractiveness is in the material world or in the Brahma Jyoti is emanating from Krishna, just as the Brahma Jyoti is emanating from Krishna. So Krishna is all attractive. There's nothing less attractive about Krishna. So just pray that we can become attracted to him more so than whatever else we're attracted to.
Anyone else from the temple? Thank you so much, Prabhu, by the way. Anyone else? A question from the temple room? Priya Arjuna Prabhu.
Hare Bhav, Prabhu.
Thank you. Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you, very, very nice instructive class and guiding us. There's one thing that I found for the time I've been here. There's been many offenses, certainly on my part. And there are some people, maybe I've approached them and tried to get their forgiveness, but they haven't. And also there's the other aspect that if one offends the devotees, they may forgive you, but Krishna still remembers this thing. Can you make a comment on that? Because certainly over the period of time, I know each of those circumstances have happened. And can you tell me what to do, maybe to get over these certainly mistakes and misunderstandings, and but also ignorance.
Sure. Well, So Krishna is in your heart and Krishna is in their heart. If you're sincerely seeking forgiveness for what you did, then Krishna within your heart will forgive you. And if they don't forgive you and you're sincerely looking for forgiveness, then that becomes their offense or that becomes their problem. Now, at the same time, sometimes we may do something or someone may do something to us where we can forgive them, but we won't forget because we don't want to be in a situation where we're treated in a certain way again. So we have the right to do that, but forgiveness also, if we want to forgive somebody, then it's us who benefit by forgiveness. Similarly for them, if we've offended somebody, then they benefit by forgiving because they're holding a grudge, means that they're holding themselves back. So we can pray that they can forgive us, pray to the deities. And it may mean also that we have to eat a bit of humble pie for some period of time if we've disturbed somebody to the point where they might forgive us but don't trust us. Then we have to earn that trust back. So that may take some time where we have to eat a bit of humble pie. And if we really want forgiveness, then we're prepared to do that. And even we can be prepared to tell the person, I know you might find it difficult to forgive me, but still, you know, I'm seeking your forgiveness. And any devotee would give their forgiveness. At the same time, it doesn't mean to say that they might want to associate with us. Similarly for ourselves, if we've been mistreated in some way by someone else, we may not want to put ourselves into their association because perhaps there's some personal differences where we think it may happen again. But we can offer some service. We can give that devotee prasadam, some special prasadam. We could find out perhaps if there's something we can do for them. Or if the person won't even speak with us, we could write a letter or speak to someone intermediary who could relay a message to them and say that we're really sorry we did what we did and we hope they can forgive us. So I hope that helps in some way.
I'm not sure how perhaps, thank you very much. Thank you.
Perhaps thank the price you. We have to the price we have to pay is to offer some humble service, or even if they don't accept it, at least we're humbled by our past situation. And every saint has a every saint has a past, every sinner has a future. So we don't give up hope.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think we'll end the class there.